The commissioner speaks, and we get into Gordon Hayward season. It's Gordon Hayward Day on this Thursday, Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Rainy Jay's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This is the truth like 34. Yeah. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global, but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Thursday, plugging along, still talking basketball because we still need the release and there's still plenty to talk about. So I'm not getting into desperation mode just yet. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com. Still going Monday through Friday on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Still the number one Celtics podcast out there. So I want to thank everybody for the ratings, the good written reviews. All of that stuff, you are the ones that have pushed this to the top of the list, so it's very, very much appreciated. Very happy today to welcome back to the show Alex Kungu, who you can follow on Twitter at Kungu_NBA. Alex, what's going on, my man?
Nothing much. Looking forward to talking basketball. I've been taking my little hiatus as well, so it'd be good to get back in the swing of things just a little bit. Just a little bit.
I know. I feel like it's so hard to gauge how people are reacting to this. Because there's this very, very serious thing that's going on in the world, and it's changing very rapidly. And I think people are like, okay, basketball's gone. I'm just going to put this aside. I'm just going to focus on this coronavirus and all this craziness, and we'll pick basketball up later. I know it's going to be there at some point. So, and that's reflected in, like, I think some of the writing stats and stuff like that. People aren't really consuming it at the same level that they were before. But, you know, I look at it as there's a need for a distraction. And at some point, somebody's going to be like, I need to just get away from coronavirus and how many ventilators are on stockpile. Let me just listen to something else. So hopefully we can provide that. Wednesday night, the commissioner was on ESPN and gave like a little update. It sounded like he said more than he actually said. But one of the things that he said was 8 full teams have been tested for the coronavirus. And that was, that's kind of stirred up some controversy because I think people think NBA players have kind of cut to the front of the line at a time of scarce testing. I don't know. Where do you fall on this?
I don't care. Like, it's fine. It's fine. Like, they need to get tested. They're in close. You can speak to this more than I speak to this. I'm not at the stadium and stuff like that. But I imagine, like, they're in contact with a lot of people, like, from fans when they do their NBA care events, with you guys in particular, other players, their big entourages as well, any other promotions and branding stuff that they're doing as well. Like, they see more, they're in contact with more people. So I feel as though, you know, like, I understand it. It's obviously not an ideal situation, but out of all the things to get worked up about, this is, like, not on my radar.
I think people are very upset at the system. I think people are very upset at the lack of testing in general. And I think the tenor of the country has been very kind of anti, like, top 1%. And here we are in a situation where I'll admit I'm a bit insulated from it. Like, I'm not being hit hard by this. I work from home anyway, generally. So this isn't, aside from not having games and practices to go to, sitting at my desk in my office is where I'd be most of the time. So I'm a lucky one, but I think a lot of people are sitting there saying, like, hey, you know, I know people that probably should get tested. Why are 8 full NBA teams getting tested? Which I understand. The system is really the problem. And without diverting this podcast into a political podcast, I can understand the anger at that. But at the same time, I do agree that those 8 teams were in close contact with somebody that had it. And in in being in close contact with him, like they're in close contact with us, people like me, for sure. Like when I heard that the Jazz traveling party, the Jazz reporters, the beat reporters all tested negative, I was thrilled because that kind of lifted a weight off my shoulders because David Locke, who is the founder of the Locked On Podcast Network, was in town and I had lunch and talked to him for a little while. And to have those interactions with people who were in contact with Rudy Gobert, you're like, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap. What's going to happen to me? So by them testing positive, there's a whole sphere of people around them testing negative. There's a whole sphere of people around them that were very happy, myself included. So I understand. But those eight teams, I still haven't heard anything else. The last we heard was four Brooklyn Nets and Kevin Durant. So that's the latest news there. The other thing that Silver kind of mentioned was trying to figure out a way to get back. If there's a way to get back, is there a way to do something for, like, in this hiatus, is there a way to gather some players? This is an interesting idea. Is there a way to gather some players, make sure that they're tested, make sure that they're clean, keep them quarantined, have them go play something for charity? Is there a way to do like almost like an all-star game or something with NBA players to get them out there competing for the NBA to put something together? Is it like maybe you're raising money? Maybe it's a pay-per-view and you charge $5 to watch and the money raised goes towards, I don't know, something that could benefit coronavirus research, relief, something, somehow. There's got to be some charity that could do that. You know, money. Maybe they use this to raise money for Oklahoma City as a make good for the testing there that is a little more controversial than some of these other tests. I think it'd be an interesting idea to get players together to have something in the midst of this shutdown to put together some sort of event that could be put together safely and do some good.
Yeah, it could also be a good test run to see how it would look without fans in the stadium. That could be like another thing. So you could do something like what you said, like on ESPN Plus or something, have like a mini tournament. You have like 30 players, like they pick their teams, they split it up kind of like and do kind of like the basketball tournament type of thing for NBA players. And then you raise money with it. You get fans entertainment product. Those guys are out and about, like they get to be out there promoting themselves. You give money back. It'd be interesting if they could do something like that. I would be wondering how teams felt about it. Like just as an individual team, like, do you want your players? Would you want your player out there? Like, what if your player gets injured out there? Are you raising the risk of your player catching the virus or like spreading it or becoming like a carrier of it by going to wherever the location would be? Because I'd imagine you would think, like just thinking about it, they would want to do New York because like the league office is there and that seems like the epicenter of the NBA. But that's also like, that also seems to be a hotspot.
Yeah.
For the Corona. So you would think maybe instead you'd want to go to like a small marketplace, I guess, or something like that, like somewhere that's just at least less infected, mm-hmm. if they can even figure that out, which would be a whole other thing. So I think they'll eventually do that, but I think they're going to want to lay low for a little bit because they don't want to be seen as just trying to recoup on money too quick.
Right, right. Like they don't want to come back and do a regular season game or something like that, but to do something that is of entertainment value that the country can be like, hey, look, a sport. I think that has value to it. And it would serve the NBA, I think, in a manner where like it's self-promoting for sure, because you're kind of taking advantage of a unique situation to put an event together. It couldn't be in New York, because those guys, like, you can't be putting them in a hot spot. You're going to put them in like Portland, Maine, and have them play at the Expo Center, or or something like, I don't know, some place where it's not a hot spot and there's like a little place to play and they go home and get quarantined and it's like a 2-day thing and it's all private. It's not going to be easy to do, but I don't know. It's an interesting idea. So that's the little bit of news that we have for the day. Going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go back into our deep dives. Today, Gordon Hayward and his return, his true return from injury. I know this is a tough time for everybody. You're kind of stuck inside. You want to try to find a way to support local businesses. You can't go out to eat, but you can go get pickup or you can get delivery. And I think getting food delivered from your favorite little small local restaurant is a great way to kind of keep that place going. And one way to do it is with Postmates. I mean, look, I'm a big eater. I like to eat. And if you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. All right. So I like using Postmates because they deliver from every restaurant that I can think of. Comes right to my door. But they don't just deliver burgers or sushi or any of that. They actually make my life easier with grocery delivery, which is something that's big right now. Whatever I can think of delivery, convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it, they'll go out there and do it for you so you can stay home. No more trips to the store, no more late-night fast food runs. Don't even have to worry about where you can grab lunch anymore. Just download the Postmates app on iOS and Android. Find your favorites and get anything you want delivered within the hour. This is huge here. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery, a $100 free delivery credit for your first 7 days to start your free deliveries. Download the app and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That's LOCKEDONNBA as a promo code for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmates.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
If you haven't been following along with the show, all this week we've been doing a deep dive on all of these players, starting with Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker. Yesterday was Jaylen Brown. Today, going to look at Gordon Hayward, his season. And it's really interesting for Gordon Hayward because I think the best thing I can say about his season is people have stopped asking him, "Are you back?" And that just goes to show that finally, he's back to being Gordon Hayward. We can stop asking him the question. We have stopped asking him the question. And now we have a sense of, 2 years after he was injured, 2 seasons after he was injured, that this is the Gordon Hayward that we have right now.
So I was listening to your podcast yesterday with Chris, shout out to him. And this is a point you've made a lot about talking about Jaylen Brown, saying like, I still think his ceiling is a high end role player.
Yeah.
And just looking at Gordon Hayward, his body work and his career and what he is right now, I think this is kind of like a prime example of how that looks like. Because I don't think anyone's calling Gordon Hayward a superstar. You're kind of getting the, okay, he's not worth the money type of thing from him. But at the end of the day, he's still hyper productive on both ends. He's still mostly getting his offense off it's from the team. Like 60% of his field goals made are assisted on. And I just look at his body of work, and then that's kind of what I see. Like I see he's just this complete player that was able to kind of now kind of show who he was, as he is a high end role player, expensive one. But I think this is kind of the best of what you wanted from him, especially with the ascension of a guy like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Kemba Walker. You just needed a guy who didn't think he was a superstar, or at least didn't carry himself like he needed to shoot 20 shots, 30 shots a game or something like that. And I think Gordon is like that perfect medium. it hasn't been pretty, but for the most part, like, I actually think he's been steadying the boat for them in a way that a lot of people don't fully appreciate.
Yeah, I think that last thing that you said is really the best way to put it. The sad thing about Gordon Hayward is the injury kind of dropped him down into that high-end role player kind of role, where and the difference between him and Brown is that Gordon Hayward had a few years leading up to the his departure from Utah, where you could see he was building up to becoming like, you know, this guy's going to be something. That last year at Utah, when his usage rate was high and he had the ball in his hands, he was creating. He had a really nice, like, his 3-point percentage was at just about 40%, and his shooting numbers were great, and his assist numbers looked okay, and his rebound, he was that complete player. Like, that was the guy where you're like, look, he's 26, he's ascended to this level, he just made his first All-Star game, he's a wing in the West, where that was, like, very hard to make an All-Star team. And you thought, coming to Boston in his prime, 27 years old, coming to the East, a little less competition there, this is a time for him to really spread his wings. And I think people kind of maybe forget a little bit that the plan was for him to be here with Isaiah Thomas. And it wasn't until Isaiah got hurt, and it wasn't until Kyrie demanded the trade, that Kyrie became the guy. And then you throw in the injury, and that just derailed everything. But the plan for Boston, I think, was to make Gordon Hayward like your number one or 1A guy. And now, because of the way everything's happened, and like you said, the ascension of Tatum and Brown and those guys, his usage has gone down to a point where he's just never going to be that Utah guy again. And now he's going to turn 30 soon, and he's starting to like tee up for the back nine of his career. And so that type of player that the Celtics were hoping for when he signed is gone. Like that's never going to happen. And so they paid him for that. They paid him to be that future guy, and circumstances just changed. So yeah, now high-end role player is who he is, and probably the best he's going to be in this situation. Even if he goes somewhere else, like he's not going to go be a number one guy. No one's signing him to be a number one guy anymore. So what he's doing now for the Celtics is, I think, about as good as it's going to get.
Yeah, and I mean, it like, minus the anecdotal, like, missed layups and stuff like that, he's had, like, a really good year. And I mean, like, even from three, he's shooting 39% three for the year, and 39% from above the break. He's been killing it in the mid-range, shooting 49.2%. He's been finishing efficiently in the restricted area, the 8 to 16 foot range, which you guys talked about with Jaylen Brown a little bit, shooting that a shade over 50%. He's been highly efficient. And the funny thing is, when I watch him, I almost, like, my actual biggest criticism of him is sometimes like, yo, I want more of you.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I want to see more of you. I want to see you take more shots, you know? And I have a hard time, and maybe you could speak to this more. I have a hard time understanding if this is more of like Gordon saying, okay, I see these young guys, I'm just going to like play within the system type of thing, or like, does he kind of like not have that? I don't know how to say this without sounding like a sports radio guy. Does he not have that like mentality of like, okay, I need to get mine now, you know? Like,
yeah. So it's funny because I heard like Kyrie talk last year, and I promise I'm not taking digs at Kyrie. You heard Kyrie talk last year, and one of the more interesting things that he said was talking to players about like when you can get your points. And he really had like this whole plan of like, you know, you get a couple of things here and there, and then, you know, you set some other guys up, and then this is where you can like rest, and this is where you get 5 quick points, 6 quick points, stuff like that. And he was talking about like crafting a game about how you score 20, 25, 30 points. And I've never really heard anybody talk about things like that. To plan out the little bursts of getting your points and how those things add up over the course of the game. I don't think Gordon Hayward thinks like that. And it's like, I bring it up because Kyrie's thinking like a primary scorer. He's thinking like a guy that's supposed to go out there and average 25 and 30. And what you're talking about is, you know, Gordon's capable of scoring 30 points. I mean, before he broke his hand, he was on a nice little run against Cleveland. He dropped 39 points, and then he broke his hand and missed most of December, or was it November? But whatever it was, he doesn't go out there and think, okay, how am I going to go score my 25 tonight? I really do think that Gordon Hayward's prime objective is I'm going to read what's in front of me, and I'm going to make the right basketball play, whatever that is. And because he's got Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown around him, all of those guys averaging 20-plus points per game, he feels very comfortable passing the ball when he's double-teamed. Whereas if he was Utah Gordon and maybe he didn't have some of those options, or maybe if his teammates were different, he would think, well, the right basketball player right here is me taking this shot because I can shoot this contested at a higher percentage than some guys can shoot that shot at an open, you know, if they're open. But he trusts his guys. He trusts Semi Ojeleye a lot. He shoots every day in practice. You see him shooting, he's out there shooting with Semi Ojeleye. And so that's why when you see him drive and you think, God, why'd you pass it to Semi? Like, he likes Semi. He trusts Semi a lot. So he's always going to give up that shot. So I think he just sees the game, and his drive is, I'm going to make the right play and trust that these teammates are going to do enough of their job where eventually the ball will come back to me and I'll have my chances to score, but I don't have to dominate the ball. These guys are good enough to kind of carry us, and it's a better play for me to give it up than to force something.
I think that's a good summation, but I also think that's concerning just taking a step back and thinking about like the path that the Celtics need to win the title with him on the team. I look at a team like the Clippers, right? Since January 1st, Paul George is taking less shots than Lou Williams. He's taking about 13.3 shots a game. Now, that's not necessarily concerning because we know in the playoffs, Paul George understands I'm the first or second best player on this team. I'm going to take my step. Like, we know in the playoffs, he's going to find a way to get 20 plus shots, and they're going to need him to do that. Because in the playoffs, you need your best players to make the plays, like, almost exclusively at times. And I look at Gordon Hayward, and I think in that time where he's trying to make the right play, trying to play within the offense, trying to be, you know, like a good team guy, I wonder, like, when it's time, when it's game three in Toronto and, well, game three in Boston, I guess, and Toronto goes on a run and everyone needs something, like, are you going to be still just running through the plays and hoping Marcus and like just letting Marcus Smart go crazy? Or are you going to say, like, okay, like, I need to step up now. This is kind of my time. I need to show, because I think he's been okay being like the fourth or fifth option at times. When in reality, there's an argument he's maybe their second or third best player in terms of just like his all around production. And I guess the concern is like, if you're looking long term and even just for him as he might go into like a next contract, if he can't flip that switch, or he doesn't necessarily see that and acts kind of like how good he is, or is able to assert himself in that way, his value has a very hard ceiling. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I don't disagree. Like, the biggest criticism of Gordon Hayward is that people will say it different ways. He shrinks. He doesn't step. Whatever it is, I feel like he does have a fire inside him. You don't play this well in the NBA without having some of that. You know, like you can't be totally passive and go out there and drop 27 points against the Indiana Pacers. Like that's just not accurate. And if that's your take on him and his game, then it's not accurate. I'll just leave it at that. I'm not going to go down that road. But at the same time, I do understand that there are times where it's like, you know what? You're hot. You've hit three shots in a row. Go for it. Take that shot. Keep trying to cook. What he doesn't do, like, he's not a heat check guy. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen Gordon Hayward take a heat check shot. Whereas Marcus Smart takes one after he makes his first three. So that's a little bit something different and speaks to the whole mentality. But the Celtics, sometimes they need him to be more aggressive for sure. But at the same time, I think he's trying to read the room. And like he did against Indiana, like, he goes off and has these big stretches, and then he sees Tatum start to cook, and he knows, like, hey, if Tatum can start cooking, then, like, that's a whole different level. I mean, that guy can start really piling up the points. So, yeah, I've been hot, but I'm not going to take away from this other guy who has the potential to get hot. And as much as this criticism of him exists, I contend that Tatum and Brown do not take the leaps forward that they take if Kemba Walker isn't here and if Gordon Hayward isn't here playing like he is, because those two guys have been willingly stepping back and letting those other guys take control when they've had opportunities. And I don't disagree that Gordon Hayward, there are sometimes you're like, no, dude, you should be taking these shots. You shouldn't be passing it up in those situations. But at the same time, I think that's just part of the package that makes his overall game so good and so valuable and kind of perfect for what the Celtics need.
I wish him and Marcus Smart switched mentalities.
I've heard that so many times. I thought that myself. I mean, how great if you can, like, switch their brains. Holy shit.
Because it's like, Mark, like, you explained that perfectly. You're like, okay, when Gordon Hayward sees Jason Tatum cook, like, he knows, okay, let's get him in. Like, I think when Marcus Smart sees Jason Tatum cook, he's like, oh, he needs a partner. Let's get it. Let's go. Like, it's the complete opposite. And I'm like, oh, my.
Yeah.
I want more Gordon. That's all. I just want more.
No, I think and this is, we've got to do a Marcus podcast at some point. But, like, I think Marcus, he sees a shot and he says, no, this is a good shot for me. But does he sit there and think, this is a good shot, but is it a good shot right now? And that's an important distinction. Like, certain shots are good shots, but is that a good shot in this particular moment? And I'll go back to the beginning of the season, Toronto. I think it was Toronto, where Jaylen Brown took an ill-advised early shot clock jumper. And Kemba, like, he turned around to, like, tell Kemba, my bad. And Kemba was like, don't worry about it. And afterwards, Kemba was like, that's a good shot for him. But in reality, it wasn't a good shot in that moment because Kemba was having a monster fourth quarter. So Smart does lack some of that. Is this a good shot right now? Conversely, Gordon Hayward, I think, just says, I think he errs on the shot on the side of, like, maybe there's a better shot than this. And he's constantly searching for, like, the best shot possible on a possession rather than, I think, what some of us want maybe is, this is a good shot for you. This is a good shot at this time. Would a better shot potentially come around if you work the ball around a little bit? Maybe. But you in this spot, this is a good shot. You should take this shot. And I think that's the distinction for Gordon Hayward. I think Gordon Hayward's pursuit of what's the best possible shot that we can get on this possession might trump some of the opportunities for him to get good shots and good moments that he can make. But he's, like, afraid, like, did I take away a better opportunity for somebody else? And that's I think the little bit of the mentality where you'd probably like a little bit of a tweak.
And I think that's a really good parallel to Jalen, because I know in your last podcast you talked about how Jalen can kind of have that 1,000-yard stare, and as the Celtics call it, being, I think Marcus Smart called it, being in the sunken place.
Yeah.
Right, where he has those moments. And I kind of feel like what you just explained is Gordon's version of that.
Yeah.
Where it's not necessarily that like he's lost or anything, but I think he can get so caught up in like, okay, right play, right play, right play, right play, that sometimes doesn't look within himself and it's just like, okay, like I'm Gordon Hayward. I'm a very accomplished basketball player. Sometimes the best shot might just be whatever I can create for our team right now. Like I'm on the court with Brad Wanamaker, Semi Ojeleye, and Grant Williams. I think whatever I can put up right now, as efficient as I am, is the best shot for the offense. And I just want to see that from him, you know, like, cause I think he has it. It's not a matter of, as you pointed out, like he's had big games this year, barring that finger injury, against the Spurs, he was probably the most likely all-star for the Celtics, like along Kemba Walker. Like he was on his way. So it's not a matter of he can't produce at that level and he's still trying to find it. Like he has it. It's just, I think I can't tell if it's maybe like the roster construction or it's still kind of him being kind of tentative over like just trying to find his place within, like trying to find his place in the pecking order within.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I think that's kind of shaking itself out. And I like I said, I really do think that he's driven by the pursuit of the best shot possible on offense. We have to talk about his contract, which I've talked about before on the podcast, but we'll have to talk about it again because really when in these podcasts, we're like, okay, so what's next for these guys? For Gordon, that question has been what's next with his contract? So we'll talk about that in a second. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So, Gordon Hayward, this is going to be a wild summer for him because he has a $34 million player option. And who knows what this whole hiatus is going to do for that. Like, what's it going to do to the salary cap? What teams are going to really have money? The teams that have been rumored or have been we've heard are going to have money don't seem palatable to a guy that's kind of, like I said, 30 years old and kind of looking towards the end of his career in the not so distant future. So, Alex, I just kind of, what do you think makes the most sense for Gordon Hayward in this situation?
I think obviously like an element of it comes to what his aspirations are. You would think after such a traumatic injury, he might be valuing security more so than the top dollar, as maybe some would expect. Or it's possible that like he sees himself in being more featured in a different role. The question then, if it's the latter, is where exactly would you go? Like what teams are exactly out there that are going to offer you the highest chance to win a championship while also getting a role that you may or may not want. I think the best thing is probably to either to opt out, get like a longer term deal on short money, or try to facilitate a sign and trade somewhere where he would want to go. Like maybe he wants to go back home to Indiana. Maybe like you're able to facilitate a trade and get like a Miles Turner, for example, or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't see it being one of those situations where like he just opts out and then outright leaves and then goes on to like Memphis or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think not only is it harder for him to kind of do that and just flat out leave because the teams that have the cap space are like Atlanta. And is he going to want to go to Atlanta and like they're interesting. They're an interesting young team, but like as a 30-year-old with no championship and you're just like, is an interesting young team really where you want to go? The sign and trade would be an interesting thing. If he just doesn't feel right in Boston, if he can, if there's a team out there that's willing to sign him, that wants him and is willing to kind of give something up for him, it's something that I didn't consider. I'm not sure if that's going to be possible. Again, a lot of this can now hinges on how the coronavirus shutdown impacts the books. And you start seeing pieces around about how much the salary cap is going to get impacted. Is it going to drop from 115 to 108 or lower? Or how is the NBA going to handle this? How much money can they recoup if they come back? Are they going to play regular season games? What are they going to do with the playoffs? All those things. It certainly impacts the next summer. Who's going to have money for Giannis Antetokounmpo? What's he going to do? Is he going to want to sign an extension? All of a sudden, it feels like an extension that he signs in Milwaukee changes and gives him a lot more money than it would with this whole situation going elsewhere. Does that open up options for Hayward to come back for another year at the big money and test the free agent market there? That's another option. I personally, I've advocated for this a ton. I think it makes sense for him to try to get that long-term security. He's broken his leg. He's broken his hand. The next injury is around the corner that who knows what it can do for him. So I think having that long-term security is important. And it's a very uncertain world right now. A lot of things have happened lately that can make a guy question, like, geez, how much do I want to mess around with, you know, a situation or tempting fate of another injury? So I wouldn't be surprised if he comes around and says, let's do something 4 or 5 years. Let's figure this out. Let's do something that makes sense. Maybe something that has a bigger number up front that descends as he gets older. That could be an interesting way to kind of, instead of going like 5 years and however many million to make next year's number 18 million, maybe you make next year's number 25 million and you go down. So later on, his number is a little bit more in line with the production that he's going to have. I think it just makes the most sense to stick around with Brad, stick around with the Celtics. They're on the rise. Tatum's on the rise. You've got guys locked up. You know the future. Jalen's got a new contract. Kemba's under contract. Tatum's going to get a contract. You know what the future is in Boston. And I think it just makes too much sense.
It'll be interesting to see like what the Celtics want in terms of contract as well, because they lost Al Horford in part because of the fact that they didn't want to go too many years. And granted, Al Horford's older, but when you start talking about getting security in your deal, and Gordon is about to turn 31, what does that look like for Celtics? Like, what does a long term deal look like for the Celtics versus how it looks for Gordon? Because I couldn't imagine they'd want to be paying him at age, I don't know, 34, 35, at a number that he'll feel comfortable with, you know? So if it's a situation where maybe they're just offering like a 2-3 year deal, does that like turn him off as well? Cause I don't see age as being someone to, you know, kind of like pay just for that. Like, oh, like we already know what's going on. So blah, 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 blah. Like, I think he's someone that wants to extract as much value as he can from any transaction that he does. And I think he looks like Gordon Hayward. He looks like kind of what we've been talking about, that theme about like, okay, like where are you in terms of like your ceiling? What can you provide? Where is your place on a championship team? What's that worth to us versus a replacement level that maybe we can't get this summer, but that's there's still next summer and summer after that, versus what Gordon thinks he's worth and what Gordon thinks is number two. So I think we've laid out really good scenarios that I think are possible, but I think the dark horse here again could be how the Celtics value him as well.
Well, that's a good point. I guess the question there is, what kind of replacement player does what Gordon does? When you think about he still defends very well. He sees the floor. He's one of their best passers. He is a very intelligent player. He can initiate an offense. You can run Gordon Hayward as your point guard. He can transition. I think his game can age well. And I don't know if you disagree, but like one of the reasons why you pay him the longer term money is I think his game ages well. His intelligence, his ability to see the floor, his 3-point shooting is up at 39% this year. I mean, that's a really great number. He could be a guy that ends up taking more threes, and even if he becomes more of a specialist down the road, he can still, you know, he can put the ball on the floor. You know, he can see the floor, you know, he can make the right passes. And he's still big and strong enough to defend guys. You can kind of turn him into like a point forward, a power forward that can handle the ball. And I think he still has 4 more years of really effective play in him.
Well, what you described to me as a replacement level sounds like Grant Williams. So, no, but you're absolutely right. Like you're not going to find that type of value. You're not going to find high end role players anywhere. You can squint really hard and hope that Romeo Langford can make a leap or something like that. But when in this new NBA where guys aren't guaranteed to be here for 19, like 20 years or whatever, you have to really just grab the moment, right? Like, we don't know. Jason Tatum's extension might be his last years in Boston, right? Same thing with Jaylen Brown.
Sure.
We don't know. So while they're here and playing at this high level, you should be trying to maximize their ceiling. And, you know, on the flip side of my argument, losing Gordon Hayward does not, you know, add to winning. It does not give you a higher chance of winning a championship, especially in the short term. So I think overall he comes back. I just wanted to a little bit of devil's advocate.
Sure, sure. No, that's true. The Romeo Langford point's an interesting one because, it'd be interesting if he never got hurt early on, what his role would be, how they see him progressing. It's kind of a lost year for Romeo Langford in a lot of ways because he never really truly got to show everything that he could do. We see him playing defense, and it's good to see him playing and understanding, like, yeah, he said it the other day, to play on a Brad Stevens team, you got to play defense. So that's what I'm doing. Is he going to kind of let that defense slip once his offense comes around, or what's his ceiling? And I think the part of the discussion of Gordon Hayward and what they're willing to pay him hinges on how they value Romeo Langford and what he can be. Then it becomes, is, let's just say round numbers, $20 million of Gordon Hayward, how much more is that worth to the Celtics than the rookie scale of Romeo Langford? If Romeo Langford can actually play next year, what's Romeo making next year? Why can't I find 3.6. So is $20+ million of Gordon Hayward, how much more does that give you than $3.6 million of Romeo Langford? Plus also 3.8 the year after and 5.6 the year after that. So I don't know. It's an interesting question. It's not, obviously not close right now, but you know, he's an Indiana legend for a reason. So who knows? Maybe all this does is, and one of the downsides to the scenario that I laid out is it makes Gordon Hayward tradable, and maybe being tradable is not something he wants.
That is a fair point. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how his contract, because it's weird because you try to have these conversations and like, there's just an element where it's just so much up to what he wants for his future, and he's been pretty good at keeping it to the like close to the vest. The only thing I really know about his goals is that he wants to win a championship. So just kind of taking that, it'll be interesting to see how that manifests itself in goals for his contract as well. But I do think the Celtics, even now, I think the Romeo Langford point is why they might not be willing to do something like a 4 or 5 year deal and would rather do something, would probably be more open to doing like a 2+1, 3+1, just, you know, cause I mean, like next year, like right now, like Romeo Langford can't even really shoot right now, you know, like,
right.
Like he still looks like he's very uncomfortable with his new form. I forgot what game it was when he hit like a quarter three and like the Celtics assistant coaches jumped up like they just won their 18th ring. Like it was, you know, like we're still there with Romeo, you know? So
yeah.
I think as far as still trying to compete for the title and putting the best product out there to get that goal, you definitely want Gordon, but I think the point of having these picks and picking a guy like Roman Langford that has that high of a ceiling definitely then brings up the question of for how long and for how much. So we'll see.
We will see. So that's our deep dive on Gordon Hayward. I want to thank Alex Kungo for joining us, joining the show for a little bit. Always appreciate that. You can follow him on Twitter at Kungo_NBA. Good follow on Twitter. Make sure you're following him for sure. Also want to thank Postmates, who is sponsoring the show this week, and it's a hell of a deal here on Postmates. Use the promo code LockedOnNBA, and for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. So use the promo code LockedOnNBA on Postmates for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Thanks, everybody, for subscribing. Thanks, everybody, for that 5-star rating and that good written review. Now, go tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen.